So I just want to check in first. How you doing? Everybody's doing all right through the holidays so far? I will admit I survived Costco on a Saturday. I did. We did. I'm pretty impressed with that I survived. It was really great. I didn't yell at anybody. I didn't get into any fights. I was actually even directing traffic because we were going against, when people are going out, in droves, and I had to, go the opposite way. I was directing traffic. And we had fun through the whole thing. So I'm we're going to have a great holiday. If I can live through Costco, I can live through anything. So I love this time of year, and I love all the richness of the stories of the season. So today my talk is your guiding star. And I've been thinking a lot about the Christmas story and how many different aspects there are to it. The idea of Christmas, when we look at this, we don't look at this as a historical perspective. All right, from our philosophy, we don't look at it as the events that truly happened. First of all, they happened, 2,000 years ago. And second of all, we can't even agree on things now, and we've got 24/7 news coverage, right? So, and nobody can agree what the truth is. So, that was supposed to be a little funny, but okay, that didn't really work. I thought it was funny. But so even just taking this idea of this story of the birth of Jesus and trying to say it's a historical event is kind of funny, right? It's have you ever played telephone game, right? Just doing that with three people and then tell me that the story is accurate, And so I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I'm not saying that it's not true. But what I am saying is that it's not the point. Whether it happened or not is not the point. What the point is that this story has existed and maintained itself for over 2,000 years, there's a reason for that. And that reason is that it has meaning for us. That those stories from the Bible are there to support us in living a full life. So when we look at it from that perspective, we have to take a different interpretation of it. Because it was written in the first century for people living in the Middle East. One of my Bible scholar teachers in my master's degree would tell us that the only way that you can understand these stories is to put on the sandals of a first century Middle Easterner and walk in their shoes to understand what those stories, what the point was, what the agendas were, what the meaning was. And yet it has lasted this long. And because they are so much part of the fabric of our lives, it means one of two things. One is that it's got meaning for us, that there's something for us to learn from it about our lives today. And number two is we haven't gotten the lesson yet, so maybe we should get it, right? That there's something there for us that we're not hearing. And so it continues to deepen and deepen along our path. So my goal with these stories and with looking at this time of year and looking at what the representation of the birth of the Christ, which we know is a consciousness, is a level of connection to the divine life. It's not about the historical Jesus. It's about what he represented. Jesus came and was probably the most enlightened being that ever walked the earth. And he came to teach us how to rise up. He came to teach us how to live differently. And so even in the story of his birth, there's things that can support us and guide us. And there's so much to the story that when I was prepping for the holiday season, I was trying to pull out things that I haven't done before. Because even 6 years into this, I've kind of covered a lot of the different parts of the story. But the one thing that I haven't done was talk about the wise men and their journey. And so that's what I'm talking about today, about how what we can learn from the wise men's journey and the metaphysical interpretation of their story that we could use and find our own guiding star. So my question today is, what's your guiding star? But let's start with the story. And this comes from Matthew chapter 2. And I'm just going to tell you the story and we'll talk about it. It says this: Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and are come to worship him. And when Herod the king heard it, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea, For thus is written through the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, land of Judah, art in no wise least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come forth a governor who shall be shepherd of my people Israel. Then Herod privily called the wise men and learned of them exactly what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search out exactly concerning the young child. And when ye have found him, bring me word that I also may come and worship him. And they, having heard the king, went their way. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And they came into the house and saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. And opening their treasures, they offered unto him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And so when we look, so that's the story, right? They saw a star, they came from the east, they talked to the king. How easy is it to just go talk to the king? Okay, they went and talked to the king, they went to see the child, they gave their gifts, and then they booked it out of there because they knew that it wasn't a good deal to go back, right? That's the main part of the story. But there's so much to it. So when we look from that metaphysical interpretation, and metaphysical is beyond what the meaning is beyond, the deeper understanding, right? And that's where it has some meaning for us. So when you look at the story from the metaphysical perspective, the wise men represent the wisdom that's carried within us, which rises when it's when there's a spiritual revelation that wants to be born. The Christ child was a spiritual revelation. And so the east represents within, man's inner consciousness. And so we don't have evolution. We don't have inspiration and enlightenment that comes from the outside in. It comes from the inside. The east represents the inner world. And they bring the gifts to the Christ child, the inner resources of the spirit, which are open to the one mind. So the gold represents the riches of spirit. Frankincense, the beauty of spirit. Myrrh, the eternity of spirit. And the star that the wise men saw in the east represents their intuition, that inner knowing. The wise men were guided by their knowing, by intuition. Stars represent our individual and yet not fully understood guidance. And so the star is in the glow of the darkness is a symbol of hope, the light that can help us find our way in times of darkness. Very often, the symbolism of the stars is connected to God, our higher power. And whatever that high power can be is alive for us. So Christmas is about the birth of the Christ consciousness at the center of the human soul, which is that holy place within. So taking that, it speaks on a deeper level. Now, truth is, if it were today, those wise men would see the star, then they would go to the consulate and get their visas. They would buy some plane tickets. They'd probably do some shopping because they're bringing presents for the baby, right? And then maybe it would take a couple days to get that going. They would get on their plane and fly to Jerusalem. They would get an audience with the king, get that rental car and drive on out to Bethlehem, give their presents, turn around and come back and fly home in what, 3 days? Right? 3 days, baby? Right? And so what we miss in this story is the fact that the wise men's travels probably took over a year. It probably took them over a year. Some say up to 2 years, a year and a half to get there. They had to travel over mountains and through deserts. They had to fight bandits and wild animals and the elements to go and give their gift. They had to focus and follow something that they didn't know what they were getting to. They didn't know what they were going to arrive at, but they knew because that star was such a sign for them, they had to follow it. And so I was so interested in that because we tell the story when I learned the story as a child, and when we tell the story, what you know, they say that the Epiphany, January 6th, is when the wise men arrived. But you know what? That was the next year. Let's celebrate Christmas now, and next Epiphany is probably when they showed up. And they say that, just for information, they say that because when King Herod heard of what had happened, he had all of the children 2 years of age and under killed, right? And so they are estimating that by the time it got back to him that what had happened, that he wanted to be clear, if this is going to be, you know, this is my, the guy who's going to try and take my crown, I better take care of this now, right? And so that's why they estimate that it took that long. And for them to travel from the east to Bethlehem, it took a while. And so what that brings up for me is, what are those things? What is the guiding star that I can follow in my life through the darkness, through the trying times? What is the thing that I build my faith on so much that no matter what it looks like in my experience, I'm headed straight for that star? And I think that that's an important question for us to contemplate, to think about, to realize that there is something greater that is calling us to understand that this story has meaning for us. What is the truth for you that is so aligned with who you are that all your choices and your actions are guided by it? What would support you in wandering through the desert for years to find the truth? Is it fear? Are you being guided in your life right now by fear? Is it love? Is it kindness? Is it an acceptance? Is it a need to be right and validated so much that no matter what happens, you're going to make sure everybody knows you're right? We are guided by different motivations. And so often we live our lives on these, I've been calling it the hamster wheel for these months, right? You've heard me say it a bunch, but we get on this hamster wheel of our life and we look down and we do our jobs and we take care of our families and we do everything that needs to happen. We take care of everything and we forget to look up. We forget to look up into that amazing night sky in the winter and see the star that's guiding us. Our lives can feel dark sometimes. And especially in this time when we're trying to create this joy and this festive feeling, so many people come through my office and have to admit, everybody's so happy, but I'm alone. Everybody's trying to have joy and celebration, and I hate this time of year. Can we admit it to ourselves when we feel like we are in the darkness? That's the first step. When you can admit, I am not happy with this, it's the beginning of shift and change, because it means that you get to raise your head and look to what's next, to look at what's possible, to look at what else you could create for yourself. This season is about the light and the darkness, whether we're talking about the Christmas story, whether we're talking about Hanukkah, whether we're talking about all of these, the solstice, about the light being in the darkness. It's a reflection for us, and it's a reminder that, yes, sometimes life is hard. And yes, sometimes we feel alone, but we're never alone. And we have resources and opportunities and possibilities that are alive within us that will guide us and support us in navigating this, in traversing it, in getting through it, in creating a new reality. Because you know what? As sure as the days are going to start to get longer after next Saturday, as sure as that is, the light is coming back into your world. No matter how dark or how difficult it is, there is something that we can hold on to and know, and that's the power and presence of God. And that's what Jesus was born to teach us. That's what Jesus was born. He came. His ministry was all about reminding us that God is there within us, that we are connected to it. So this year, I had a really wonderful experience. I've shared it before, but I had a powerful experience with the Rising Strong work that Reverend Sherry presented here, and she's going to do it quarterly in the next year. I encourage you that if you're really wanting to make some shifts, that it's a wonderful way to open up some new avenues for you. But for me, it got really clear. There's a part in the process where you have to sit down and figure out what your true value is. And so I've got a lot of them, right? I had a list of like 10, and she told me I had to get it down to one. I was mad. I was pretty pissed about that. But so I had to pick one of what my value is. And I kept, I liked different words. I liked this word better. I liked that one. I was trying to figure out what it was. And as we're coming down to the time where I had to choose it and so we could move on in the workshop, it became really clear. It almost popped off the page that my value is love. That my guiding star is love. And so what that means for me is that no matter what's happening, no matter what button gets pushed, no matter how far to my edge I get, no matter how cranky I am, there is a red flag that comes up. There's a loud booming voice in the back of my head that reminds me that you are not going to react to this because you are here for love. Can't tell you how frustrating that is sometimes, because it's really satisfying to get mad and to react sometimes. Then you feel horrible. I'll admit it. You feel horrible when you react out of anything other than that. But I am I'm also human, as we all are. So when I start to react in a certain way, when someone cuts me off, when I'm in line at Costco, when I'm, you know, trying to get something accomplished and all of my electronics decide not to work at the same time and I can't get anything accomplished, whatever those things are that push me to my edge to get me to be reactive, I hear this voice that says, what would love do now? Sometimes I just laugh. Come on, give me a break. Let me just get mad. Okay. Right? And so what I want us to do is to figure out what it is that is your guiding star. What are you here for? Are you here to be an empowering force in your own life and the lives of everybody around you? Are you here to be that accepting, loving arms? Are you here to be that inspiration? Are you here to be the presence of love? Whatever it is, that is your guiding star, and everything that we do aligns to it, and everything that we create aligns to traversing sometimes that dark desert in the middle of the night when all you can see is the possibility of what your guiding star is. To know that it is something that will sustain you over a period of time, because sometimes we know that these seasons of the dark last a little bit longer than we'd like. Sometimes there's some challenges that it's going to take some commitment and some focus to move through. But what this story reminds us is that it's inevitable. You will find the place where the new consciousness is born. That star will be hanging right over that house or stable, manger, whatever you want to call it. It will be. So the star in the story represents our inner knowing. I want to come back to the idea of our intuition, because we need to be connected to our intuition. And so I wanted to share that there's three levels of thought. So there's our instinct, right? That's what, if you think of your animals, our little fur friends and the wild animals, they live on instinct, right? There's a way of knowing that one of the levels of thought is our instinct. It's an innate response, right? It's our fight or flight, right? It's how we react. It's hardwired within us. And that still is alive within us as humans. But we have two other levels of thought. We have our analytical thinking. And that is our intentional, organized thought process that's usually geared towards solving a problem. We move into our analytical minds when we are trying to fix it, we're trying to figure it out, we're trying to move forward in a specific way, right? You can feel that different level of thought. The instinct is deep within us. Our analytical thought kind of lives in our heads. Anybody live in their heads in the room? You don't need to raise your hand, really. I know you're here. You've been in my classes, right? But then there's our third level of thought, which is our intuition. And your intuition is your knowing. It's knowing without knowing how you know. It's a natural, thoughtless process that requires no analysis or deep thinking. And it's alive within us. But the challenge is that our intuition is conditioned. We are conditioned to ignore our intuition. We are taught and socialized into having that be the smallest way, or the least amount that we do our thought processes. Most of us are reactive, or we're overthinkers, and there's some combination of that. Maybe intuition lives a little bit in there. Every once in a while, you'll get a feeling, but we won't follow it, and then we'll go, I knew it. I knew I should have bought Apple in 1984. I didn't know that. I was only 13, so I didn't know about the stock market at the time. But I use that because we all know that we could have bought Apple in 1984 and then we'd all be billionaires, but that's okay. But that's the idea, is that we get conditioned out of deepening our intuition and connecting to it. And so what our work is, in order to be able to find that truth, to follow the truth of our lives, we need to develop our intuition. We need to start listening on a deeper level to ourselves. As we start to allow that to grow, then we follow more of these deep understandings, because all of the divine wisdom, all of that guidance, all of that support that's there for you is speaking on your inner your inner world. It comes to you from that place. And if you haven't heard it, it's like it's Chinese. And it takes some time to allow yourself to hear it, to listen to it, and to trust it. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, says that intuition is God in man, revealing to him the realities of being. Just as instinct guides the animal, so would intuition guide man if he would allow it to operate through him. It is the ability to know without any process of reasoning. And I found some other quotes I liked about this. So Oprah said that, "I've trusted the still small voice of intuition my entire life, and the only time I've made mistakes is when I didn't listen." Steve Jobs said, "Have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary." And the last one is Madeline Lengel. She said, "Don't try to comprehend with your mind. Your minds are very limited. Use your intuition." And so what happens is that we get into trouble when we start to follow our fear instead of our faith, right? We get into trouble when we start to try and hedge our bets and try and avoid catastrophe in our life, right? When we try to, when we can't get our minds off of what the worst case scenario possibly could be, and we're trying to avoid it. And so that's when our star becomes our fear. But we don't want our star to be our fear. We want the star to guide us to the fullness, to the purpose, to the power of our lives. That's where joy lives. When we start to follow our intuition, that's when it gets fun, because things pop into our world that we never could have imagined. Ideas show up, inspiration happens, we end up doing amazing things in ways that we could never imagine, because let me tell you, you have no idea what's possible for you, but God does. This infinite presence that has loved you so much, it brought you into being, has a magnificent adventure unfolding for you in this life, and you get to live it. God wants you to have that fullness because you are expressing its own life. There is no limitation in that. This is the being that created the cosmos, the universe, and it created you. There's only love in that. There's only possibility in that. And so in times of darkness, we have to look up to see that star of hope, to remember that something greater is happening. I came across a story. I remembered a story. I know I've told it before. I think it's been a while. But there's a story of a woman named Trisha Colburn. And so she, when she was 46, she had her stuff together. Don't you love it? I love that feeling of, you know, when you have your stuff together. She had three kids. She had a happy marriage. She was an artist and had this beautiful art studio that she was producing art in. She got to do what she wanted every day. She had the life, right? She was so happy with it. She went to bed one night and she had a dream. And she was standing in front of a barbed wire fence, and there were like five or six people on the other side of the fence that were trying to talk to her. But she couldn't understand them. It was as if they were speaking another language. And they were very worried. And they were trying to tell her something. They were trying to tell her something. And she couldn't get it. She couldn't understand it. And so she woke up and was really affected by the dream. But there wasn't really much to do with it, so she just kind of let it be. The next week, she had the same dream again, except for this time there were about a dozen people there. And they were agitated, and they were trying to explain something to her and trying to get across a message, and they kept shaking the fence and trying to get her to understand, but she couldn't. She woke up crying that time. And then over a period of time, she kept having these dreams, and they were getting to be more people and more people. And there was, at one point, there were 100 people there trying to express something to her, and she got so scared. She woke up, and she just knew something was wrong. She knew deep within herself that something was going on, and she thought it was in her body. So she had had a physical about 6 months earlier, so her doctor didn't approve another physical. But he said, you can do blood work if it'll make you feel better, if something will show up on blood work. So she had her blood work done, and he called her 3 days later and said, no, it looks good. You look fine. I think you're overreacting. Just relax. There's nothing wrong. 2 days later, the dream came back, and she said there were 100 people there. The next day, she had the dream again, and there was no one there. And at the end of the dream, before she woke up, she had, I guess in the dream, she was calling out and saying, please come back. Please tell me what I'm trying to understand. I really want to understand. Please let me know. And she heard a voice clearly in her head that said, look deeper. So she went to a friend of hers and said, okay, what's the deepest place in the human body? And the doctor said, well, I guess it's your colon. And she said, okay, I want a colonoscopy. So she called her doctor, and she got a colonoscopy, and he said, we're not paying for it. There's nothing wrong with you, lady. We're not, you know, your insurance isn't going to pay for it. You're gonna. So she paid for her own colonoscopy, and she told the doctor she wanted to be awake, which I don't know that much about that, but that does not sound fun to me. So in the middle of this procedure, what happened was that she was listening, and the doctor saying, yeah, everything looks fine, everything looks fine, everything looks fine. And then all of a sudden, she heard him go, and they found a dark mass in her colon. And they immediately put her out. They did a biopsy. It was cancerous. And the doctor came back to her, and she went through treatment, and they took care of it. And the doctor came back to her right as she woke up from her treatment, from the operation she had to remove the mass. And he said, if we had waited 2 months, you wouldn't be here today. And she trusted that intuition. She knew something was wrong, and she knew that even when all these people were telling her to relax and to let it be, that dream, that which is that deep connection to that knowing, right? Sometimes our lives speak to us in dreams. Sometimes our lives speak to us in knowing. Sometimes our lives show up in different ways. Can you trust what you know to be true? Even though you have to traverse the desert, even though you have to go over the mountains, even though you have to contend with the elements, can you continue on your path of knowing what is right for you in this life? That is what this story is telling us. That is what this divine star is trying to express to us in our world. This season is so rich with meaning for our lives. And yes, it's wonderful, and we're going to have so much fun. I'll tell you, the next couple weeks of our celebrations are so fun. We're going to be singing and celebrating the joy of the season and with our kids and our families and one another. And it's such a wonderful opportunity to share our love and to receive it. I love this holiday so much, but there's such a deep message here for us. There's a deep spiritual message for us that will allow us to start this next new year connected to something greater, connected to our own knowing. Because we are living in a world at this point that is yelling at us what it thinks. And whoever's opinion is out there, and whoever is the loudest, and everybody's trying to get louder and louder and louder. But what we need to do is to stop listening to that and start listening to that still small voice. Because that is the star that's going to guide you. That is the star that's going to support you and bring you everything that your heart needs to live this full, fulfilling, magnificent life you've been created to live. And so as we move into this time where we approach the solstice and our days are very short and the nights are long, I invite you to light those candles. This is one of the things that I love. I've been, my poor husband, I've been circling. Every time he comes home, I put more Christmas lights up around the house. I just, and they're half fallen off, and they're hilarious. But I, you know, like, there's something for me about being in the darkness and lighting the candles and lighting the Christmas lights and being present to that, to allow for the light to emerge from the darkness. There's such beauty in that. And so my best wish for you in this week as we approach the solstice next week, as we move within and connect to the truth of who we are, that you find that guiding light. because it's right there at the center of your being. And when you put your attention on it and you listen to it, it's going to serve you. It's going to support you. And you can't go wrong that way, because that's God as you. And so it is.